On Agenda Tonight, I talk to an MHK who, depending on which side of the debate you're on, either has the fate of civilization as we know it to try to rescue or is going to charge you loads of green taxes for no good reason. Controversy and conflict undoubtedly lie ahead, but does DEFA Minister Claire Barber possess the wisdom of Solomon needed to deal with the challenges her department is expected to address? Thoughtful, considered, with just a hint of mischief, but how long will her honeymoon last? So what does the minister think of her new title?
I don't know, it's terribly strange. I always say to officers, I'd far rather people just called me Claire. And then my little boy the other day, because he'd heard someone call me minister, decides to call me at home. So I've got the 7-year-old trotting around calling me minister. I'm like, no, now we've really stretched the realms of reality. Mummy will be fine.
So a couple of big things coming up this week in Tynwald. The island plan, probably the biggest of them all, not on the order paper, but it will be on a supplementary order paper. Is there much in the island plan in relation to environment, food and agriculture?
So there's the outline of the high level work, and obviously then there'll be departmental plans that come off the back of that, which will be really important. And obviously we'll have then the annual debate for each department as well, which I think is a really positive step forward to really shine a light on some of the work that goes on in departments that maybe gets forgotten, but also to make sure that we're not just telling people what we're going to do, but listening to what people want us to do, because actually it's got to be a two-way dialogue. But certainly one of the key pillars is around environment. There's a big piece around the climate change transformation work, and it will look to pull that work together and really put a focus on what that actually means to people for the island.
And I think as well, in terms of DEFA, often people look at it as separate areas. There's a kind of a forestry and lands bit, and there's a food bit, and there's a environment bit. But they are remarkably linked, aren't they? I mean, there's an awful lot that can be done, particularly in relation to climate change, both in from the food and forestry sectors.
Absolutely. I mean, they are really intertwined. And I think, I'm coming to see that when we're talking through bits within the department. And obviously I sit on the Climate Change Transformation Board and looking at the interplay there. But I think it's so important to pull climate change away from any one department, because this has to be across everything. And it's forcing government to come out of the silos and really look at how we can do stuff better. So I think that's really positive. What obviously is going to be the next step and the test, I suppose, is making sure that then translates into policy and a clear direction for all ministers to work to, and that the public know what we're up to. So I think, getting the communication is always a challenge. And I think, as with everything, you get so caught up in what you're doing and you feel like everything is revolving around it. And I've commented on that from the previous councillor ministers with COVID. And I said, I'm sure you guys all feel like you're so busy and everything's going on, but people outside are stood at the door thinking, what is going on? And I think I keep having to try and ground myself back in terms of that thinking about making sure that we're not only soaked up and wrapped up in everything ourselves, but make sure that we're communicating that and listening as well.
And of course, as well, when it comes to communication, the best way to hide a needle is to build a haystack. And it's fair to say that in the past, ministers have been successful or perhaps not in terms of getting their messages over by just swamping people with far too much information, and perhaps a more considered approach that gives the information that's most relevant to what people actually need to know.
Yeah, no, I think that's important in everything. It's there's a fine balance between making sure we're communicating and not providing an information overload where people can't extrapolate the stuff that's really relevant. So I think we've got to sense check everything we put out, and it's important that we make sure that the messaging is around the things that are relevant. And for me, that's where the island plan needs to come in, about those things that, what does this actually mean to someone within Douglas East or within Erin Michael or anywhere else on the island? What does this mean to them on the ground, and what can they expect to see as the outcomes?
One of the ironies of politics, and particularly elections, of course, and where I'm going with this, is the other item on the Tynwald Order paper that you're involved with. Yeah. And of course, yourself, I think it was Rob Mercer and Chris Robertshaw produced an excellent report into the the dairy sector on the island, and the report required your department, as it now is, to report back by December 2021. And here you are as minister coming to Tynwald, reporting back on the report that you produced, which was mildly critical of the department.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's been a few things like that. And, you know, we focused on, within that report, on the separation of regulation and promotion, which is something I remain passionate about. And we've got the consultation that happened last year around regulation and how that should look, and perception of conflict and actual conflict. And that's an ongoing piece of work that I think will be led by Cabinet Office ultimately. So, you know, I'll be looking to feed back in that regard. But yeah, there is something slightly odd about feeding back to myself. And in fact, as another similar anecdote, I found a Facebook post where I'd given some quite clear instructions to what I thought the next DEFA minister should do about planning. So I've dusted that off and had a little look. Yeah, again, it stands true, but you do find yourself in a position where you're answering questions that you'd asked and criticisms that you'd levied. But I think that's right. I think you have to be able to say, you know, I can't just shut the doors down and pretend that I never said those things. Clearly that absolutely was my opinion. It was founded in information that we had presented to us as a committee. We pulled a report together, and I stand by what's in that. So it's important now that I work with officers to make sure we deliver on those items.
And certainly my experience both sides of the argument, really, but particularly as minister, is that there are certain things that perhaps aren't considered by parliamentary scrutineers that have to be considered by ministers primarily in terms of pragmatism, at how you actually deliver things. So is there anything now, looking back at your report, that you think perhaps that was not as well understood as it could have been? Or
I don't know necessarily with this report, but I mean, I would say there's a similar thing around the Public Accounts Committee request for a public inquiry, and then looking at that pragmatically. Obviously, we've acknowledged as members within Council of Ministers that an independent review actually achieves the right outcome. So I think it's being able to say those were the reasons, and the reasoning behind where we got to was correct, but there are things that you perhaps aren't privy to, things that when you look at them and you're able to reflect with a different hat on can look a little bit different. But again, it's about being able to communicate why you've changed your position, if that is what you're planning to do. But yeah, I'll be making a statement around the separation of regulation and promotion. And I think that does stand true, from my perspective, still across government, certainly in perception.
And in terms of that, because at one point there was talk of a regulation department, and then I'm not sure, has it become a regulatory board or whatever? How far has that developed, and is that something that's committed to in the new island plan?
So at the minute, that's still at a responses to consultation stage, and then looking at a possible direction of travel, and that's something that we have been working on within DEFA, which we'll be framing to share with Council of Ministers and Cabinet Office ultimately. So there's progress going on, but that will be then framed around those outcomes from the consultation, and listening to the fact that people do perceive there to be an issue when a department is both regulating itself and regulating the service that it's providing. So I think we must listen to that perception and understand it, and then seek to separate where possible, but also knowing that some things possibly can't be separated because of the structures we have, and knowing when actually it's beneficial to have some degree of crossover, but it's got to be clear.
And there's also an issue in relation to the scale of government on the island, in terms of large governments in large countries, they have the luxury of being able to separate everything out into neat areas and make sure that appropriate divisions are in place between regulator and promoter and whatever have you. Sometimes in the Isle of Man, maybe, you know, we just don't have sufficient resource coming in to government to be able to fund all that. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that is fair. And actually, I mean, we've come across some areas where you might have half of one person doing the promotion side and half of the same person doing the regulation. Yeah. Now, you know, you're going to end up increasing the cost of government, the size of government. So it's looking at, are there other ways that we can do that? So whether that be bringing some of the regulatory functions together so that we can dual train people and provide some resilience as well within those services. But that's the piece of work now that needs to be led on to look at how that will look in the long run.
Yes, and again, you know, one of the perpetual things that governments are accused of is creating more and more red tape and regulation. So doing anything in terms of anything new in terms of regulation is always going to be seen as piling on the red tape. So it's going to be quite a challenge to get this one right.
Yeah, it's a fine balance, but it's also the stuff that protects consumers. So it's looking at some of those functions within the Office of Fair Trading, and we've got Road Transport Licensing Committee, we've got Environmental Health, we've got all those things that actually, you know, are just quietly working behind the scenes, doing some really important work around protecting the people of our island. Often it's work that's unseen, and some of it's about making it clear what those functions actually are, how they're being carried out, and, you know, where there is a perception of conflict, trying to do a bit of demystifying, I suppose.
One of the interesting things that was announced recently was the extension of the Kroger licence. That must be giving you quite a few headaches in the department, in as much as on the one hand, the environmentalists are very clear in saying that we shouldn't be extracting any more fossil fuels that haven't already been clearly found and made accessible. And then on the other hand, potential for billions of pounds to the Manx Exchequer. So is that one that keeps you awake at night?
I think it's certainly one where, you know, I spoke to people on the doorstep about this. It's sort of head and heart and trying to find, you know, something that works for everyone. And I think acknowledging that in this case, we probably won't be able to find something where everyone's comfortable with the outcome. I was comfortable with the 4-month extension because actually there's not going to be anything happening on a practical nature within that 4 months. But that gives the opportunity for information to be shared from both parties, really, both from the license holder, but also from Climate Change Coalition and experts within that field who can give some of the information that I think is being desperately asked for, actually. And it is a fine balance to strike. And, you know, I think it's important that we recognise it's not so simple necessarily as saying absolutely no or absolutely yes. But for me, the 4 months was a compromise position. I know some people think that the seismic surveying is going to happen within 4 months and by the end we'll know exactly what's there. That's not the case because of the time frames for actual licensing of the seismic surveying from DEFA. There is no licence granted to do that within this period. This is purely to permit the information sharing, ensuring that if there was any license extension, that those requirements within, for example, the Climate Change Act, within Paris Agreement, could be met by the license holder. So there's a lot of information I think still needed. And one thing I'm not is someone who wants to make decisions when I don't have the information available to me. And that was how it felt when we were coming up to the end of that license.
Yeah.
Obviously we've also got Rob Mercer's really helpful motion on the order paper, talking about the bigger energy strategy. And I think that's a really valuable piece because it separates out energy provision on island, the opportunities economically for energy that we could export. And I think there's a separation and understanding probably needed within that separately. You know, from everything I'm seeing, Kroger isn't necessarily about energy security for the island, but there is an economic opportunity. And I think it's important to separate that and to understand that. But that's the conversation that has to happen within the next few months.
One of the other quandaries that you'll be facing, no doubt, and I'm sorry for rubbing my hands together and smiling.
You've been here before, Phil, you know.
But yeah, one of the quandaries that you will have is the issue in relation to management of the lands and plantations, the glens. We necessarily had to cut back on expenditure when money was really tight back in 2008-09. which meant we just about had enough to maintain everything. And then a whole load of pesky diseases have come along, causing significant problem. This one caused me significant problems because I had to answer the questions on Phytophthora ramorum on a regular basis. Now, of course, the big one is ash dieback, which is in the next year or two going to have a dramatic impact on the countryside. And presumably, that's something that your department's resources are going to have to focus on rather than improving access to the glens and plantations and all the things that you would have preferred to have to be able to spend your money on.
I mean, I think in an ideal world, any politician would love to do all the nice bits and not worry too much about the problems and the challenges. But of course, that's not how it is. And, you know, your inbox ends up swelling up with the challenges to the point that you've haven't got time to look at the things you wanted to do. But no, certainly ash dieback, in terms of the heat maps that are available, you know, there is an extensive challenge there, and we've been working with DOI on that because it needs to be very much a partnership approach. Saying that isn't though to the detriment completely of the glens, and there has been work ongoing at the glens. We've looked at both installations that bring people to the glens and encourage them to use them. And I was down there with the Bougain sculpture from Tom Pringle, which is absolutely fabulous, with Winnie Callister down there doing the Bougain poem in the most amazing Manx mist that came in for us, and all the Bougain beavers down there with me. You know, so there's things that we can do to bring people into the glens, but there's also things around accessibility, and there's a piece of work that we're very much committed to within the department in looking at really helping people understand which glens they can use and what's there, because actually a lot of people don't know what glens we even have, and you tend to hear the same ones, you know, that people will visit and use, but there's some other real hidden gems around the island. But making sure people know what the accessibility is like, whether there's parking, whether there's facilities at those glens, so that people can make an informed choice about which one they might use, but also recognising the interplay between different user groups, so whether that be horse riders, whether that be mountain bikers, people with young families, or people with disabilities. So trying to maximise the glens we have and how we can make sure that information's out there.
And it's hard to underestimate just how significant glens, forests, plantations can be in terms of improving people's well-being as well. And of course, this is a massive issue, particularly relating to COVID and all the concerns and worries that people have. So the more we can get people out and enjoying the countryside generally, but particularly glens and forests, the better, I would say.
And that ties in with the health and well-being strand within the Island Plan as well. As you say, you know, I remember watching a few documentaries actually where in Japan, I think they just go and stand in the middle of a forest and just breathe. And I was like, you know, just being present and actually doing that in some of our plantations and glens, absolutely beautiful. You can sit in there and the world just, all the problems just seem to slip away. You know, I think we're very, very fortunate with what we have in terms of our natural habitat on the island.
So can we expect a few Council of Ministers meetings in the middle of these glens and plantations?
I think it'd be great. We should do far more of that, you know, rather than sitting around a table. You know, we could definitely get the whole ventilation thing for COVID sorted as well. We'll just go for a walk around the glen and solve the problems of the island. But I do think that genuinely there is a lot to be said for changing location of meetings just to try and change mindset. So I'm not sure whether we'll end up in the glens because it might be a bit soggy underfoot, but you never know.
And we touched a little bit there about time and how you manage to do time in terms of your role. One of the things certainly that I found as minister is the time that you had for constituency work and issues that you were personally passionate about. If those areas didn't happen to tie in with your department, it was very difficult to find time to actually do anything other than your Comin and ministerial role. Is that something that you're finding? And do you remain hopeful that you'll find a solution?
I think when I came into the role, I remember 5 years ago coming into being an MHK, and you think, oh, you know, once I get on top of everything, then I'll have time to, you know, pick up on some of those things that I really wanted to get done in my manifesto. And you get to a point, you're coming towards the middle of the term, you're thinking, when is that moment going to come when I get on top of anything? And I think there's just this this element within being an MHK or an MLC where there's always more you could do. And I think that certainly gives me sleepless nights where you think, actually, you could fill 24 hours a day and there'd still not be enough to pick up all the policies and legislation that you'd like to dig into. So you have to prioritise. And I think that probably is, you know, on a greater scale when you're a minister that I perhaps hadn't realised. You know, I thought, well, it might be nicer just having one department. Because when I first started, I remember being vice chair of the post office. I was on the Environment and Infrastructure Policy Review Committee, on Home Affairs, on Health and Social Care. I was on a couple of other standing committees. And I thought, goodness me, you know, if you told someone you were the vice chair of the post office, most people would think that was your job. But actually, you've got all of that, plus the constituency work, plus, you know, just time to actually eat and sleep and everything else and spend time with loved ones. So I thought, being a minister, well, at least you only have one department. However, I'm not sure I thought that through completely, because obviously you're then doing that department to an additional level of understanding. So at the minute, I'm still in the honeymoon period where I think once I've understood the backstory of how we got to where we are on a number of things, I'll be starting from a level base, and then hopefully there'll be a little bit of time to do the other stuff. But I am starting to think, looking at your face, I may be wrong.
Well, there's always hope, isn't it? And optimism is a great thing. One of the things as well, which we've not really touched on, and this is an apocryphal story, which apparently was supposed to have taken place when Miles Walker, or Sir Miles, apparently said to Donald Gelling, who at that time was the Agriculture and Fisheries Minister, "Would you like to become the Treasury Minister?" And Donald considered this and said, "Well, I'm not so sure whether will I be able to manage with the high finance and this and that." And Miles apparently replied by saying, "Well, if you can manage the farmers and the fishermen, you'll have no problem with anything else." So how are you getting on with the farmers and fishermen?
Do you know what? Really, really positive dialogue. And I've been really grateful that so many of the farmers and fishermen have wanted to meet me and talk to me and talk about some of the challenges that they're facing in terms of the industry. And I mean, there are a number of quite specific challenges at the minute. Specifically, I mean, nitrogen fertilizer, for example, prices are exponentially increased, you know, which puts increased pressure on farmers. But then there's some positive stuff that's happening around the knowledge exchange framework and looking at how we can support, through the work of ADAS and the department and the agri-environment scheme, those farmers to look at how to make their businesses work better. You know, there's plenty more, though, that I want to do. And I know it's a big piece of work, but I certainly want to make sure that that dialogue is kept positive. Because if you don't have open dialogue with the people it's directly affecting, I don't really think there's much point in being here and trying to do anything.
And certainly, in my experience, most farmers and fishermen have got some pretty good ideas. Back to the you're bound to let somebody down their position as minister, but there's some great ideas out there. And it's just trying to find which are the ideas that can work best for most of the industry.
Absolutely. And I've got you know, a few visits to farms set up, you know, where I'm really keen, you know, and grateful really for the invites that people have extended to me to go out and see the working farm, understand a bit more about you know, how that business is working and any challenges and those barriers where there's a perception that DEFA really could do something differently. And you know, I think that's for me what I need to be listening to and understanding is what needs to change from the perspective of the farmers, but also then the wider population and where those interplays are, because the farmers do a huge amount of work around the wider landscape and land management. And I'm not sure, you know, that's always understood. It's just the level of land that is managed by our farmers. So it's always looked at, you know, well, you know, the food production. But as you said before, there's that interplay in terms of that wider management. And then, you know, obviously with the fish producers as well, and the scallop producers. And I think we've got this real rich industry on the island that goes back many, many years. And it's important for me to listen, to understand. So I'm, you know, again, really keen to go out and go out on the boats and actually see what's happening, because I think there's nothing that grounds you more and gives you the insight more than actually going down there, getting your wellies on, and listening to people who are working within stuff. It's no good me just sitting in an office looking at pieces of paper and saying, "Ah, oh, yes, well, now I'm an expert in farming and fishing and everything else," because I don't pretend to be, but I've got far more chance of understanding it better if I go and get involved and listen to people who are out there working day in, day out, than if I sit in an office and just read papers all the time. There's a balance, got to do a bit of that, unfortunately.
The minister is, in my view, very impressive after 3 months in the role. How she will be viewed next year after having to take tough decisions will be a more interesting measure. But for now, I'm Phil Gorn. Gurumayu. Thanks for listening.